All right, another in our season outlook series here on the Dunked On Basketball podcast. We are joined by the foremost Grizzlies writer, at least in my opinion, Chris Harrington, to talk about the local squad. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Nate. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. It is always kind of funny to find out that people listen to the show that I wasn't aware of, but that's great to hear. So this Memphis team, obviously last year, you know, usually where I like to start on these is, all right, how good were they last year? In this case, though, with all the injuries, that really is not especially predictive, you might say. But, you know, I think maybe the place to start, though, is what is the health status of this team now? Because I think they're going to be pretty good if healthy, but there are some questions about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the big mystery coming into the season because, I mean, they've got, well, actually not a starting lineup at this point, but what was assumed at one point to be a starting lineup in which all five players had either age and or health concerns and then a bench that had concerns about productivity. And the key is really, the health questions with what should be their three most important players, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, and Chandler Parsons, because they all had their seasons ended early last year with injuries. In Mike Conley's case, it was a little bit precautionary, but it was still an injury-related issue. And you had Marc Gasol and Chandler Parsons both coming off of fairly significant injuries and rehabbing those injuries. And I would say the feel coming into the season is a little divergent. I think there's a lot of positivity around where Marc Gasol is at this point relative to what it could have been, given the severity of his injury, relative to his age and to his size, his size physically.
To talk about Gasol. So where is he at now as far as his activity level, status for opening night, that kind of stuff?
He is in – Marc Gasol is the main reason I feel better about the Grizzlies now than I did 2 weeks ago, despite some of the other questions, because he is legitimately in better shape both physically and, I think, in terms of his frame of mind than he was a year ago this time. He came into camp last season a little out of shape, a little out of sorts, and it was very apparent. He looks like, to me, in the same shape he was 2 years ago before he had, his basically career season. And he's a guy, Marc Gasol is a guy, I mean, Tony Allen's sort of known as this really expressive, colorful player. But if you're around the team and you're in the locker room and around these guys, Marc Gasol is really the most expressive player on this team. He does not have a poker face. No matter what he says, you can see it in his eyes, you can see it in his body language, how he feels about things, how he feels about himself and how he feels about the team. He did not feel good about either of those things last year, even before he broke his foot.
Yeah, why do you think that was?
I think he came in, he wouldn't say this, but my sense is he came in a little bit out of shape. I think he took the summer a little bit easier than he had the year before. He did not come in the same condition he did, the year before in his contract year. He was a little heavier. The foot had been bothering him.
That happens to a lot of guys, I think, in their free agent season because you don't want to work out and like get injured in the time between when the season ends and when you actually sign your contract.
Right. So he had come in the year before in, quote unquote, the best shape of his life. And it really was because he's a guy who's tended to get heavy sometimes. He was a little softer, a little less conditioned last season. I think the foot had been bothering him for a long time. And he said this subsequently. The foot had been bothering him for a while. And the game where he broke it, he was actually listed as questionable with foot soreness that day. So I think he was playing a little bit hurt and he was playing a little bit heavy. And I think there was a lot of stuff around the team where the guys were sort of out of sorts, whether that was related to the coaching or whether that was related to chemistry of the players. I don't think Jeff Green was a good fit. I think a lot of guys did not particularly enjoy the way that Green's role in the team impacted the team's play. So I think Gasol was out of sorts physically and mentally last year. He has come into this season and he seems chomping at the bit to get going. He looks totally, obviously this foot, you never know what will happen. It could get re-injured, but as of today, he looks completely healthy. He looks completely in shape. He looks completely mentally ready to go and excited about this season. And, and until something happens with the foot, and you never know. I mean, this is an injury that has really impacted a lot of guys' careers. It's sort of the same injury Kevin Durant had, and he came back all the way. And so right now, Marc Gasol looks 100%, and he's 100% on opening night. They are talking about keeping a closer eye on his minutes, both in terms of games, in terms of maybe sitting some games, in terms of practice time. And so they are keeping a close watch on that. But when the ball goes up opening night, he is 100%.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think it is a little different than Durant, because Durant was a Jones fracture, which is the fifth metatarsal, right. And Gasol was a navicular fracture, right?
Right. Yeah. But it's a similar kind of thing. They were optimistic about it from, you know, they talked themselves into the best case scenario. But they were optimistic about Gasol. I mean, one of the things that people with the team pointed out is that he's flat-footed, and that was going to help his healing more so. They also thought he would be, unlike some other players who have had these problems, he would be a great patient. Like, he was a guy who was going to really follow to a T everything the doctors and trainers told him to do and really work hard on his rehab. And, you know, we'll see what happens over the course of the season, but he's in better shape right now than I ever expected him to be at this point coming off that injury.
Yeah. I mean, when I, which, did is, the
which,
under
which
podcast,
is a contrast to Chandler Parsons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll get to it in a second. When I did the over under podcast, one of the concerns that I had is that he had sort of that, propensity to get a bit corpulent at times, as you mentioned. And so I was worried that with all the inactivity that would be an issue for him, but it sounds like it hasn't been. But yeah, let's get to Parsons now. Tim McMahon, you know, we were surprised because we had heard initially, oh, it's just a small scope, it's unrelated to the previous microfracture, which always raises my eyebrows when they say something like that, and that it was just, you know, your normal small meniscus trim, 6-8 weeks type of thing. And then for him not to be cleared yet, Tim mentioned, you know, because he covered Chandler in Dallas, that it was actually a meniscus repair rather than a trim, which might be better for his long-term health, but it also means that perhaps he's not going to be ready to start the season, it sounds like.
Well, I paid close attention to Tim McMahon's reporting on this, and Tim's been in town, so I've talked to him a little bit. Also, I heard him on your podcast, but I mean, Tim is the guy who broke the story to begin with, and the Grizzlies signed Parsons, so he's been very close to that situation. And when he reported in March, at the time that Parsons had the surgery, he reported it as a 6-week rehab, and he also reported that it did not change Dallas's frame of mind in terms of bringing Parsons back. And you flash forward to free agency, suddenly yeah. Dallas wants no part of a long-term deal after consecutive surgeries on the same knee. And to me, that's a red flag, especially when you look at, I know Dallas has had a propensity to be a little conservative with that. I mean, they were wrong about Steve Nash once upon a time in terms of that. But the Grizzlies signed Vince Carter 2 years ago as a free agent who coming off an injury when Dallas did not want to do that. And while Carter's been okay, in retrospect, Dallas was right about his health situation. The Grizzlies signed Brandon Wright, who had been in Dallas off of, you know, injury problems. So there's been a history, I think, with the Grizzlies in free agency taking gambles on health and them not quite working out relative to a team like Dallas that's been a little bit more conservative with it. And so, I think it's a concern. And when you go back to McMahon's reporting about it, maybe that 6-week report was way too optimistic, but now it's going on 7 months, and he is still not cleared to play. Now, people around the team that I talk to say, you know, if we really wanted to push it, he could play on opening night. I don't think that'll happen. But the implication is he'll be ready, you know, sometime in November, that it won't linger that far into the regular season. But, you know, coming off two surgeries on the same knee, a 4-year max contract, 7-month rehab, and he's still not ready to go, I think that's a sign of concern.
Yeah, I agree. And we talked about Gasol potentially taking time off. Parsons was eased in last year. You have to imagine it'll be the same thing this year. But it's easy to do that when, you know, you're on pace for 50 wins and it's just a matter of playoff seeding. But especially when you consider the lack of depth that this team has, there may be more pressure because they might not make the playoffs unless they get, you know, full seasons from those guys.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a situation where for their offense, I mean, there's a lot of upside here. If you think about an offense that's built around Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, Chandler Parsons, I mean, it sort of fits together perfectly, but that's if those guys are on the floor. And if those guys are not on the floor, you're really looking at a lot of unproven players being forced into significant roles, significant usage situations. You know, you're going to rely on a soon to be 40-year-old Vince Carter. You're going to rely on a James Ennis. You have rookie backup point guards. You have depth up front, but you don't have players like Marc Gasol you can run the ball through. I mean, other than Zach Randolph, but. So there are not players behind those three who can do the same things in terms of usage and in terms of their role in an offense. So I mean, that's why I'm sort of getting ahead of ourselves. But I think the Grizzlies are a pretty wide variance team this season for those reasons.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think so you mentioned Conley as the third of that trioka. He missed much of the end of last season, was not able to come back for the playoffs with, you know, Achilles soreness. Do we ever get an understanding of exactly what that injury was?
I think a lot of it was cautionary. I mean, at that point, I'm not, I know they made the playoffs, but Marc Gasol was gone. They knew they had no chance in the playoffs. I don't think they were, you know, if they were in a competitive, I mean, Mike Conley played with a broken face the year before, right?
Right.
I think if it were a situation where it were a truly competitive playoff situation, he would have played. But given that what had just happened with Marc Gasol, given that they lost a few days after they shut down Conley, they lost Mario Chalmers with a ruptured Achilles. I think they were being very conservative with Conley, and I think rightly so. There is a general concern that Conley has tended to wear down late in the season almost every year. I mean, when he broke the face, that was a freak injury. But when that happened, he was already dealing with foot problems, with wrist problems, with ankle. I mean, he's a smaller point guard. He's approaching age 30, and he's had a tendency to wear down, and his health to be a concern pretty much every spring. And that's something they have to be concerned about. I mean, like you mentioned, they got to get to the playoffs, but they need those guys healthy when they get there. And so that's going to be a tightrope for them to walk in terms of managing health, even if they don't have quote unquote injuries.
Before we get into the meat of projecting what this team is going to be, I did want to ask you your thoughts about their offseason. From my perspective, I actually graded them as having a good offseason. I don't think anyone anticipated them getting a player as good as Parsons. And Conley, especially when you consider their draft pick situation, kind of makes tanking a little bit dicey, or shall we say rebuilding. They gave him a contract that might look pretty bad at the end of things. But on the other hand, I thought they exceeded expectations, and I'm not sure, you know, at least that got Conley to come back, and I'm not sure what they could have really done differently. Like, what did you think about their offseason in the aggregate?
Oh, I think they had a strong offseason. I mean, they took on a lot of risk, but what were their alternatives? They had the ability to get north of max cap space this summer, and their decision was, do we put most of those resources on getting the best individual player we can, or do we spread them out and improve our depth? And they decided to push their chips in and get the best individual player they could. That ended up being Chandler Parsons. If Parsons can get healthy, he is almost a perfect fit, at least on the offensive end of the floor, with a Mike Conley and with a Marc Gasol. He gives them not only the shooting that they desperately needed, but I think an underrated thing they've needed for years is secondary playmaking. They need someone on the wing that when the ball goes to their side of the floor, they can make a play. They haven't had that. They've had, you know, Courtney Lee and Tony Allen and Jeff Green and some of these guys who I think Parsons is much more adept as a playmaker in the pick and roll than those guys. So he can give them shooting, he gives them playmaking, he gives them versatility they haven't had, and in the sense that they can go smaller and move him to the four. So I think if he's healthy, he's a perfect fit offensively. He's 27, so he's right in the same general window as a Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. I mean, I think, you know, you're concerned with age-based decline with those players, but you could talk yourself into a 3-4 year window with that trio and have a competitive team with it. And so, you know, it's a gamble with the injury, but if you look at the market, and, you know, John Lewis getting $40 million contracts, Eric Gordon, who's had, you know, getting $15 million or whatever it is, you know, Ryan Anderson's getting $20 million. I mean, given the market and given where they are competitively, where, like you said, they can't really tank because they still owe two future first-round draft picks, I think they took a gamble, but it was the right gamble to take. And Parsons is the only – and the fact that they were able to get it done is impressive because
right.
before Chandler Parsons, the only outside free agent the Grizzlies have ever signed or ever acquired for more than a mid-level exception was Darko Milicic. That was it. That's the only free agent they've ever signed and actually gotten on their roster from outside that was for more than a mid-level. And so this was an unprecedented thing for them. It's a great fit if he can get healthy. I think obviously that's the centerpiece move that they made. You know, they made a coaching change. We won't know how that's going to work out until the game start, but the signs are extremely positive with Fizdale. It was a well-regarded hire all around the league. The players seem really excited about him. It's already paid off dividends in terms of free agency because Chandler Parsons, you know, cited Fizdale and especially Bernie Bickerstaff, his associate head coach, as a big factor in deciding to come to Memphis rather than go to Portland. So I think people feel really good about the coaching hire. They feel good about the free agent signing despite the risk. And then, you know, the smaller moves around the edges, I think all are all defensible at minimum.
Yeah, how are things going to change under Coach Fizdale compared to Dave Yeager?
I think the biggest change right now you see is an attitude thing around the team. I mean, Dave Yeager was a really good coach, but there was always friction going up with, you know, front office and ownership, just because of the weird way that he sort of came into the job and the way things changed around him.
Yeah, there was that Minnesota flirtation a couple of years ago.
Yeah, there was the Minnesota thing and the half in, half out, and then, you know, he was elevated by Jason Levy, who got the boot, and so he wasn't, you know, Chris Wallace did not really hire him to be a head coach. And so there was never a sense of everyone being on the same page once Levian got the boot. And then there was, you know, Para had this, you know, there's been some denial of this, but I believe it to be true, that Para, you know, tried to fire Yeager basically a week into his first season. So there was always a rocky thing with him and the ownership. So it was always weirdness going up. And then with the roster, I mean, I think the players respected Yeager, but the core guys never seemed to totally buy into him. Maybe the degree they had with Lionel Hollins, the way they seemed to with Fizdale. So I think there's a better mood around the team. And then in terms of on the floor, I mean, it remains to be seen, but I think Fizdale is doing a lot of the things that Yeager tried to do, but he's being more forthright about it. It's not reactive. Dave Yeager made changes with the lineups and stuff last year as a reaction to the struggles they were having on the floor. And I think Fizdale is being more proactive and, right, you know, you've seen it with the report of Zach Randall moving to the bench, which Yeager did for a while in season. Fizdale is being very upfront about this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it, and getting everyone to buy in on the front end. Now, whether everyone stays bought into that, it's going to depend on what happens, you know, when the games start. But I'm impressed that he's being very direct about what he's doing. And he's trying to make the same kind of changes in terms of modernizing the Grizzlies, making them more adept at small ball, better able to defend small ball, more three-point shooting, speeding up the pace. It's all the stuff that everyone knows needs to happen and that Yeager tried to do and got a lot of pushback with it. But I think Fizdale is being very direct about it. And it seems so far people seem to be buying it.
I thought Zach Randall's comments were interesting. You can interpret them one of two ways. When he was asked about potentially moving to the bench, he said, yeah, I'm okay with it. I'll do whatever the team needs, blah, blah. But he also said, you know, I'm still fully capable of starting like I did on the end of last year when he was still the offensive focal point. So it does seem like there's a little bit of like, you know, at least trepidation about that from his perspective. What I wanted to ask you, I mean, number one, you kind of mentioned the locker room aspects of it, but do you think that starting Jamichael Green, bringing Zach Randolph off the bench, just in basketball terms, do you think that's a good move?
I was a proponent of it before they did it, and for a few reasons, and it's all the reasons Fizdale ended up sort of signing. From Zach Randolph's perspective, I think at this stage of his career, it allows him to have a higher usage role, but while keeping his minutes in check, and at the same time trying to match him up better with matchups he can exploit offensively, but that will not exploit him defensively as much. I think last season we saw a tipping point with Zach Randolph in that as the style of play around the league changed, at the same time he aged, it got to the point where, you know, when he's facing up with matching up with a Kevin Love or Draymond Green or some of these kind of players, what he gave up defensively is now greater than what you gain with him offensively, and that became a problem. And so I think moving him to the bench helps maximize his value offensively, while minimizing sort of the negatives that he brings defensively. What it also does is it gives you a guy you can give the ball to on your bench. I mean, because if you're not bringing Zach off the bench, you look at that bench unit right now, it's rookie backup point guards, it's Brandon Wright, who's a good finisher, but not a guy you can really run things through. And so, I mean, when you get to a half-court set, what's your bread and butter? Is it a Vince Carter, Brandon Wright pick and roll? I think Zach gives you someone, a first option, but also a fail-safe option. If whatever you're doing is breaking down, you need someone to get a shot. He can get a shot. And so I think it helps the bench that way. And in the starting lineup, with a healthy Parsons, he may have been a fourth option offensively, which is not something I think he's ever been or would be comfortable with. And so I think, you know, if you have Conley, Parsons, Gasol, you got your three high usage guys to run your offense through. And I think you're much better defensively because Jamichael Green is much better defending in space. You're much more switchable with Green, Parsons, probably Tony Allen, You can hide Parsons defensively. You can guard small ball better. I think it all makes sense in theory. The question is going to be, can Jermichael Green play well enough to make it work? And will Zach Randolph accept, to me, not being a sixth man, but how's he going to manage sitting down the stretch of close games? Like, what's going to happen in crunch time if you feel like you can't have him out there for defensive reasons with the other team playing small and Zach Randolph's on the bench in the last 3 minutes of a close game? I think that's more of a problem for him than not starting.
Yeah, what I think that Warriors series in 2014-15, when they were able to go small against Zach and have him be guarded by Harrison Barnes, even if he was going to get double teamed, was a little bit of a tipping point, because it used to be you would have to, most teams would actually just put their center on Zach Randolph,
right?
Because he was just so good at ducking in. He was probably the best power forward, because the way that you can kill guys as with post-ups, it's not necessarily, okay, we're going to like ISO you 30 feet from the basket or 20 feet from the basket against this guy and have you back down and then the defense can see what's coming and rotate over. It was those duck-ins that he worked so tirelessly at. He would get foul calls all the time. He would get the ball right at the rim and you just couldn't bring help. If you had a forward guarding him, it would just be a disaster, because he was just going to get that guy in foul trouble and, you know, was going to get opportunities right at the basket. Now I think he's not quite able to do that as well. And, you know, I think that's a bit of an issue. But the thing about it is, you know, maybe I like Jermichael Green. I liked him, you know, back when he was, okay, a fringe guy. Like, I think this guy could be a rotation player, but I still think Zach Randolph is probably just a better player than Jermichael Green. And while I agree with you that the fit could be
completely
better.
But yeah, I actually think that the fact that Zach Randolph is clearly a better player than Jermichael Green makes it easier in some ways, because last year when Dave Yeager took Zach to the bench, he replaced him with Jeff Green. And there was a sense of I'm being replaced by this player. And no one thought Jeff Green was better than Zach Randolph on that team. I think when you replace him with Jermichael Green, I think Zach knows that's not why. It's not a matter of we found the better version of you. He knows he's better than Jermichael. Jermichael knows that he's better than Jermichael. Then I think you can sell him better on, this is a fit thing. It's a fit thing for how we manage our lineups over the course of a game, for how we find the best role for you at this stage in your career. Jermichael Green is not the Zach Randolph replacement long term. I mean, I think the franchise hopes he's a bridge to Jarrell Martin, who maybe ultimately is that player, which remains to be seen. You know, Jermichael's never had, this will be the first season where he's coming into the season with a defined rotation role like this. He showed some good signs last year. He showed a little bit of growth as a three-point shooter, especially from the corners. He's good at defending in space. He's a hustle guy. He reminds me a little bit of Darrell Arthur when he played here, as a guy who's a mobile defender who could knock down open jump shots. And if he can become a little bit more solid as a knockdown jump shooter, I think he could be a good role player in sort of a lower usage role with that lineup. But he has not proven he is not a marginal player. And I think there's a chance that over the course of the season, I think the Grizzlies certainly hope that over the course of the season, Jarrell Martin emerges as the power forward of the future. And that maybe Jermichael Green is a bridge to that. But no, if Jermichael Green comes out, he's not making jump shots. And I think rebounding is sort of an underrated concern. He's only been an average rebounder, and that lineup is going to suffer.
And Mark,
I think,
is not the greatest defensive rebounder either. So,
yeah, I think the stats underrate Marc Gasol a little bit. I haven't watched him play pretty much every game in his career. I do think he has a tendency, and if you look at last year, like Zach Randolph's rebounding numbers, which were down, Zach Randolph's rebound rate was much higher when Marc Gasol was on the floor than when Marc Gasol was not on the floor. And I think Gasol does have a tendency to box out and let his teammates get the boards. He's not a greedy rebounder. That said, and he doesn't even try on offensive rebounds, and that's more of a by design. But that said, he's certainly not a great rebounder, even if the stats underrate him individually a little bit. And Mike Conley's a subpar rebounder, given his size at that position. Chandler Parsons is a subpar rebounder, probably a three, much less if he scales up to a four. And so now you look at a lineup where the only starter who punches above his weight on the boards is Tony Allen. And so I do think rebounding, I mean, the Grizzlies fell last year. They've been a top 15 rebounding team every year during this run until last season. And I think rebounding is going to become a problem for this team.
Yeah, they used to really bludgeon teams on the offensive glass, especially, which is another reason why teams were hesitant to go small against them. But they're not doing that as much this year. Jarrell Martin, you mentioned him. I was impressed by him in flashes at times last year. But, you know, he's had these foot problems that he's been dogged by. Where is he at health-wise?
He played, started preseason, and he was in better. He'd slimmed down. He'd got a little heavier, I think, from where he was in college when he had the foot problem as a rookie. He looked a little slimmed down, but now he's been wearing a boot, honestly, on the other foot. Not the foot that gave him problems last year that he had surgery on, but he has some soreness on the other foot. He's actually been wearing a boot. They say it's just strictly a precautionary thing and it's not a problem, but, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. I think with him, I mean, he missed all of summer league and he missed training camp and everything his rookie year and was out on into the season because of the injury problems. He finally got into the rotation the last couple months of the season and showed some signs. He at least looked like a real NBA player, which is when you're a rookie drafted in the 20s, there's no guarantee you're ever going to be able to really play in the league. And
for those who might not be familiar with him, can you just describe quickly like what his game is like?
He's not a stretch four. He's a face-up four. He's an athletic, attack off the dribble, get out in transition, power forward, like a 6'9", muscular, athletic. Not particularly long. His jump shot mechanically looks okay, but he is not. I mean, he's got a ways to go to be a real like spot up guy. But he's a tank. I mean, he will attack the rim. He's athletic, face up. He's quick. He showed pretty well defensively as a guy who can get out and guard pick and roll and guard the perimeter last year. And so, you know, he needs to develop more of a jump shot at that size, you know, to be a good four. But he's shown to be an average rebounder at best so far, so that's a problem too. But he's a guy who's, you know, he's athletic, he can score. He's got potential. He's only 21, 22. He does have a lot of experience at this point. So there's no telling what he will be, but there's at least more potential upside there than there is with Jamichael Green. And so I think they hope that he will develop into something over the course of the season where they can sort of pencil him into their plans going forward. But coming out of the gate, I mean, he may be the fifth guy in their big rotations.
So if you'd like to manage your money a bit more like the Hawks or the Warriors, and perhaps less like some of the less frugal teams that we've seen, you should consider Betterment. Betterment is a great way to go. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. They are the largest independent automated investing service out there. One of the great products they have is Smart Deposit. If you're someone who has a variable income, what it can do is take money out of your account once you get above a certain preset limit. So if you feel like you need to have $5,000 in your account just to be safe, anytime your balance goes above $5,000, you can set it so that it'll invest that money for you automatically. That's just one of the smart services that they have, and Betterment is at a lower cost than more traditional financial services. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. Again, you can get started with them and in saving for your retirement or other financial goals with 6 months of no fees at betterment.com/capspace. That's betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about it, and I still haven't even started to hit my outline yet, but I'm enjoying this conversation, is just this team's medical staff and just the overall health record of late. I have some questions about it. Like, for one example was Jordan Adams had that knee surgery last summer. He comes back, he played in that 50-point blowout that I was at in Golden State. He plays, you know, like 15 straight minutes, basically, just because, you know, you don't want to be wasting the starters, but that was his first game back. And then he basically like hasn't played again. He had to have more surgery. Now it looks like he's going to miss this whole season again. It seems like, you correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but
I think there were enormous red flags around injury issues with this team last season. Yeah. I raised those concerns publicly. A lot of people with the team were not happy to see myself and others raise those concerns. But the Jordan Adams thing, I mean, like you just said, he has surgery, he comes back, he plays one game, and then immediately he's never heard from again and ends up having another surgery. So clearly that looks like a mistake that he came back in that game.
There were red flags around that. In your first game back, seems like crazy. I don't remember exactly how much it was, but he definitely played a long stretch there in his first game back. That seems like it was pretty nuts. And then Gasol too. You mentioned that he had some foot soreness. He broke his foot, and I think he actually like stayed in the game after that for a while too, as I recall.
No. I mean, I was there when that happened. I mean, he at one point he planted, and it happened immediately. He just he he left the court instantly.
Okay, I'm misremembering that. That's my fault.
Yeah, but another piece of that, you're right about Jordan Adams, and there was all kinds of red flags around that. You're right about Marc Gasol, who was questionable with a sore foot before that game, and people even before the injury happened, people were questioning whether he should have been playing in that game. But there was a third piece of it was Brandon Wright, who was out with knee soreness, and there was even some public disagreement about what his status was. Between our beat writer at the CA, Ron Tillery, had reported someone with the team calling him soft. There was some sense that he could have been playing and wasn't playing. Then he ended up having another surgery. And so there were red flags around the Brandon Wright stuff too. A lot of people raised those concerns during the season. And what happened this summer was, honestly, they fired their trainer and they reshuffled their medical staff, which to me is a pretty clear acknowledgement that there were concerns internally about how they were handling the injuries last season. So now they have reshuffled their entire medical staff this summer. So hopefully whatever was going on, and I couldn't speculate about it, but there were clearly problems. Whatever those problems were, hopefully they've got them cleared up. But now the team absolutely shuffled its medical staff this summer.
Yeah, Jarrell Martin had the broken foot, and then that dodged him again. Did he have another surgery in the spring, or did he just have to like take some time? I can't remember what that was.
I think he did have a minor procedure because he was available at the start of the playoffs, and then they set him down. Yes, and so there were lots of questions about their medical stuff last season, and they responded to that by changing their medical staff. So hopefully those issues have been cleared up.
All right, let's get into a little bit more of this season now. Backup point guard, I think, seems like it's going to be a bit of an issue, especially with Conley coming off this injury. They've got Wade Baldwin. They've got Andrew Harrison. One of those guys is going to have to play. How are those guys? What are you hearing about them so far? How the team feels about those guys? Who has the inside track for that role?
The scuttle over the summer was that Harrison was sort of ahead of Baldwin. He'd had a full season in the D League. They liked what he did in the D League. I was always skeptical of that. And what you're seeing in preseason so far is it looks like that Baldwin is ahead of Harrison. The question is going to be whether they have the stomach to stick with that or go out and get a better point guard. I mean, this franchise, pretty much every season during this playoff run, at some point has gone out and gotten a better point guard in season or before season starts, whether that was Mario Chalmers last year, it was Benno Udry the year before. In past years, it was, they brought Jason Williams out of retirement for a while. They brought Jamal Tinsley out of retirement. They've had a tendency to go out and find better point guards because they haven't been happy with what they've had. David Fizdale has a pretty good player development record from Miami. At least the Heat has a good player development record. He's got a lot of credit for that. So they're talking about giving their younger players more of a leash this season than Dave Yeager or Lionel Hollins were willing to do. And I think Baldwin's going to be the test case of that. I like what I've seen from him in the sense that what I've sort of said is I think he's a player who's going to be good before he's good. And what I mean by that is his game is nowhere close to being what it should be skills-wise. And, he's a 20-year-old rookie point guard. But he's so long, he is so fast, and he plays so hard that he's going to make plays just based on athleticism and effort that might help get him through while he's sort of developing. He's 6'4", he's got a 6'11 wingspan. He's the fastest guy on the team end-to-end with the ball. He's shown the ability to make plays. He's also shown the ability to defend multiple positions with that length and athleticism. So I think those, and he plays really hard. He's got a sort of a cockiness about him that's similar to Kravis Vasquez when he was here as a rookie. He was the last rookie to really help the team his first year. So I think there are a lot of positive signs of Baldwin, but he's also a rookie point guard, and he's going to have bad nights. He's going to have turnover problems. His shooting percentage, may be a little shaky. And so the question is going to be whether the team has the patience to let him go through those growing pains on a otherwise veteran team that's trying to be a playoff team. And that remains to be seen. I will not be surprised if they make a move for a veteran point guard at some point to shore that up. And I think the good thing for Baldwin is that he can also play the two. And so there's a path to playing time for him, even if they bring in another veteran point guard. And in fact, I would not rule out a return of Mario Chalmers until he ends up with another team.
Yeah, really quickly, why did they release Munford? Was that just because there was an agreement to bring in Harrison after a year in the D League? Because I thought Munford was actually pretty good.
I think Munford showed a lot of interesting signs. I think there was a lot of overlap between him and Baldwin, honestly, in terms of their size and skill set. that was probably part of it. And I do think, you know, I do think there was, you know, sort of a tacit agreement with Harrison that, you know, if you go spend a full year in the D League, then there will be a spot for you the next season, you know, provided, you know, you don't, provided you're able to earn it. I think there was sort of an understanding when Harrison spent a full year in the D League that they were going to make an opportunity for him coming in this season. So this team was not really going to be able to keep Andrew Harrison, Wade Baldwin, and Zavier Mumford all on the roster. So I think that was that. But I do think, even though they have a full 15 under contract, it would not surprise me if they look up at some point, decide we need another veteran who could play the point on the roster.
Yeah, I think that could end up happening. But, you know, it could also be that these guys, I think if they're good, maybe it's more likely that they make that kind of a move. Shooting guard also, I didn't really, you know, this is a team that always kind of seemed to have some shooting guards. Like, then they traded away Courtney Lee. And I think a move that was a good move because since, as you said, they weren't going to be competing for anything last year. And they got multiple second rounders in that transaction. But Tony Allen is starting at the two. He perpetually has, you know, is dealing with hamstring issues or sore knees. He's 35. It remains to be seen how many games he can play. Behind them, you got Vince Carter and Troy Daniels. Jordan Adams, as we mentioned, is going to miss the season. And then James Ennis maybe kind of gets in that mix too, though he's also more of a forward maybe than a two guard. But how do you see that situation at the two shaking out? And am I right that is looking like a weakness relative to, you know, most two guard situations in the league?
Oh, it's definitely a weakness. One note on that, Jordan Adams may not actually miss the season. There's been some reporting to that effect, but Adams said on media day that the doctors had told him he would be able to play this season. And I talked to someone with the franchise and they told me the same thing, that they don't, it's not a given at all that he is out for the year. In fact, they hope that they try to work him into the mix at some point in the season. He has been participating in shoot arounds. You know, he's not, you know, wearing a suit, wearing a boot. He is out working and they hope to get him in the mix at some point this season. But when they drafted him, I think the hope was always that this was the year he would step into that role, that when Courtney Lee came off the books, Jordan Adams in year three would be ready to step into that starting spot. Obviously, the injuries prevented that from happening, even if, you know, his talent. We don't know what he would have become if he had not gotten hurt. And so I don't think anyone expected Tony Allen going into what will be his age 35 season to still be the starting two guard on this team. But it's sort of where they are, and I, you know, despite his limitations, I think that's probably where they should be given the other options. I am personally a little skeptical of Troy Daniels. I mean, this is a guy in an era where shooting is at an absolute premium in the league. He's probably one of the 5 to 10 best pure spot up shooters in the NBA, and he still can't get on the floor.
Yeah, it's the Anthony Morrow, Morrow principle, where it's like, all right, hey, this guy can shoot it. He seems like a great idea, and now this is his third franchise, and he hasn't been able to get on the floor for either of his previous two in Houston or Charlotte.
Yeah, the only players in the NBA last season who generated more points per attempt on spot up jumpers were Steph Curry and J.J. Redick. Troy Daniels was third on that list, and he played a total of 9 minutes in a 7-game playoff series for the Hornets. And so that tells you something, I think, about his limitations. The Grizzlies have been starved for a quote-unquote shooter forever, but shooters only help you when they're on the floor. And so, I sort of suspect that not only will Vince Carter be ahead of him in the pecking order, but over the course of the season, I think you can see Wade Baldwin and James Ennis from either direction cutting in that playing time. So I'm skeptical about Troy Daniels. But they got to figure out something because Tony Allen is only going to play 20 to 25 minutes a game when he plays. He's going to miss 20 games, and they need him, frankly, to miss that time because what we see with Tony Allen is that his body has to be right. When he's been on the nagging injuries, he is not the same player. We've seen over the last few seasons him take a couple weeks to get his body right, and when he comes back, it's like he's shot out of a cannon, and you see sort of that chaos agent who just changes the temperature on the floor when he's in the game. That only happens when he feels like himself. But he's not a guy, unlike a Marc Gasol or Mike Conley, who is going to sort of play through nagging injuries and still be as productive. He has to be right for him to make the kind of impact he can make. And so I think they're going to be juggling. I think they're going to be juggling all season with the two guard spot. I think if Baldwin comes around, and he may not as a rookie, but if he comes around, there's a lot of opportunity for them to play smaller backcourts. They had a lot of success with Conley and Chalmers together last season. They had a lot of success with Conley and Jared Bayless together. I think that's a good look for them if they can find the right player to do it with. Baldwin has that capability, but he's a 20-year-old rookie. I mean, he's a guy, he's a different kind of player, but he's a guy who can develop mentally. I've sort of compared to guys like Avery Bradley and Eric Bledsoe, who were also sort of combo guard, athletic combo guard types who came out early, went in sort of the mid-first round, and took a while to develop. I mean, guys like Bradley and Bledsoe were bad as rookies, but midway through their second year, they started to emerge as good rotation players, and now they're both quality starters. I think Bradley, I think Baldwin can be that kind of player, but it may take him the same kind of length of time to start coming together for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite sure that he has just the innate level of defensive intensity that those guys necessarily did, but I mean, in terms of from a length standpoint, kind of a combo guard standpoint, I understand the comparison. What do you see as the big strengths for this team on a team-wide level?
I think it's Mike Conley and Marc Gasol as a combination. I think those players, neither of those players is underrated anymore as individual players. They've got max contracts. They've gotten league-wide accolades. I mean, Conley is someone who's been sort of celebrated as being underrated so much they may be overrated to a degree.
Yeah, but I think now that he's the highest-paid player in NBA history, we may have to retire that moniker.
Exactly. But I do think it's possible that people around the league may still underrate the impact those guys have together as a combination. You're talking about a pick and roll combination that can play all league defense, that can run offense through both players. I think they got elevated when Rudy Gay got traded 3.5 years ago, and that's when this became the Mike Conley Marc Gasol team. And over that 3.5 year span, whenever they've both been on the floor, the Grizzlies have played at a 55 win pace in terms of winning percentage. When either one of them has been gone off the floor, they played at a 38 win pace. And that's through Tony Allen injuries, through Zach Randolph injuries, through a revolving supporting cast, through different coaches. When those two players have been on the floor together and you run the offense of those two guys, and they're sort of both the tip and the terminus of the defense, anchoring the defense at the top of the key and then in the paint. I just think that combination is so good together over the course of a long season that if Conley and Gasol stay healthy, this is going to be a good team. This is going to be a playoff team. And if those guys miss games and they have more so than planned, and if there are injury problems, then the Grizzlies could fall apart. I think that combo sets a floor for this team that's fairly high if they stay healthy.
Yeah, that pick and roll is devastating. I mean, Gasol just swallows guys up on screens, and then he's able to make a play. He's able to pop if necessary. He's able to find a shooter on the weak side. So yeah, I agree with you that's really solid. I do have a little bit of concern though. Just I mean, not only because he's coming off of an injury, but just because now at age, I think 31, that he's just going to be moving into a new phase of his career. As you mentioned, how much of it was the injury last year? How much of it was not being in shape? How much of it was just, all right, he's a little bit older? And because he had essentially a career year the season before at an age much later than most players even would do that. So I think while there is a chance, especially based on what you're saying about him being in shape, my operating assumption is that he's just, you know, going to take on a continued gentle decline this year, and that's a major concern for these guys. And even Conley, I think, as coming off the Achilles, being, you know, 28 now, as a small point guard, we could see a little bit of a decline from him as well. And I agree with you. If those guys play the way that they've played the last 2, 3, 4 years, absolutely, this team is really good. I'm just not sure that we can really expect to see that from them now.
I'm actually more concerned with natural decline with Mike Conley than I am with Marc Gasol. I do think a lot of it was health related, both in terms of conditioning and being injured
last year too, actually.
Oh, it totally did. But I think his game is so much about size and skill. And I think you're going to see him expand on the skill part of that this year. He's accepted that he's going to start shooting threes. And I sort of always thought that was coming at some stage of him. He's going to have that Arvydas Sabonis, Sam Perkins, you know, just knocking down flat-footed threes as he aged. And David Fizdale has told him he wants him taking 4 threes a game and sort of trying to add that to his game. I think, to me, my question of Marc Gasol is totally the foot. Is he going to stay healthy? I think he's going to have an all-NBA caliber season, whether it's what it was 2 years ago. I don't know about that. But an all-NBA level kind of season if he stays healthy. Conley, I'm a little bit more concerned about because he did not finish as well last season as he has in the past getting to the rim. Was that sore Achilles was at a natural consequence of aging. As a guy who's, you know, entering his late 20s and is a smaller player, if I had to bet on one or the other to hold their value over the course of these contracts, I would actually bet more on Marc Gasol than I would on Mike Conley.
Yeah, I agree with you on that score for sure, just because of his skill level, his shooting ability. He's just at a position where quickness is not, you know, at so much of a premium. What do you see as some of the big weaknesses that opponents are going to be trying to exploit?
Unfortunately for them, I think there are potentially a lot of them. I mean, I think obviously the core of this team is aging, and that's a question. I mean, there are injury problems we've talked about with everyone. Even if everyone's healthy, I think depth is a real issue. You get outside, you know, their four or five best players and get into, I'm sort of setting Zach Randolph aside, but get into like the real bench in terms of playing time. The only player in his prime, proven player in his prime on that bench is Brandon Wright. And there are questions about him too. So I think depth is a concern. I think shooting continues to be a concern. If Chandler Parsons is healthy and Troy Daniels can stay on the floor, those two guys are going to make a big impact on their shooting. This has historically been one of the NBA's least prolific and least efficient three-point shooting teams. And until they prove otherwise, that's a concern. If you're starting Tony Allen at a two-guard, that's a problem in terms of your shooting.
Yeah, their starting lineup has two guys who can shoot threes in it, their projected starting lineup,
right,
at least who have proven it up to this point.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, if Marc Gasol really is going to become pick four threes a game, and I mean, that remains to be seen. I mean, certainly David Fizdale is looking to get more three-point production out of his bigs than has happened before. And so, you know, Marc Gasol and Jermichael Green are going to be given the green line at least initially to shoot threes, and maybe that changes the complexion of things. But until it's proven otherwise, shooting should be considered a weakness. And I think, like I mentioned earlier, for the first time, now rebounding is starting to become a problem.
Yeah, I think that that's right. I want to run this by you because I'm starting to wrap my head around this. I think when Tony Allen is on the floor, I think they're still going to defend. They're still going to be good. He's slipped a little bit, but not too much. But when he's not out there, you have to imagine he'll probably play only maybe 40% of the minutes this season between injury and just matchup difficulties on offense and just being old and not being able to play that many minutes. I think their defense could actually be a little bit of an issue when he's not on the floor. What do you think of that?
Well, and it certainly slipped last year. They had been a top 10. They've been a top 10 defense for 5 years in a row, and last year it slipped to 19. Obviously, the injury problems wrecked their team stats for the season in a way that made it sort of hard to get a handle on. I think a lot of that comes back to Marc Gasol. Is he slipped so much defensively last season? The question, if Marc Gasol can get back to being an all-league caliber defender, this is the former defensive player of the year, if he can get back to being an all-league caliber defender, you would think with Marc Gasol at center and Mike Conley at point guard, and then, you know, Tony Allen, I think Jermichael Green's a good defender, they have the tools there to probably not be an elite defense anymore, but certainly to be maybe a top 10 level defense if everything goes right. And if they can improve their offense under Fizdale with adding Chandler Parsons, I think, you know, the ideal scenario is instead of being a top five defense and a average to below average offense, which is what this team was at its peak over this playoff run, if you can sort of balance that out a little bit more, and what you lose on defense, you gain on offense, and you're more maybe, you know, a top 10 defense and a top 15 offense, and maybe that, you know, and that end up being a similar kind of quality, that would be the hope. But, you know, I do think some slippage on defense from what they were at their peak is almost certain, but they need to hang on to being top 10 level, at least top 10 to top 15 level defense. If they're not a top 15 defense, they're not going to be in the playoffs.
I agree with you on that. All right, so what do you think is the best case scenario for this group? We talked about that this is a high variance team. I certainly agree with you in that respect, but let's say everything goes right. Parsons comes back opening day shortly thereafter. Gasol and Conley are able to play full seasons. Tony Allen, you know, is able to play a full season and nobody declines too much due to age. What's the ceiling for this team in terms of wins in the regular season?
I think if everything goes right, they have a very good chance of being the four seed in the West, and even potentially knocking on the door of a three if you get some kind of decline or problem with the Spurs or the Clippers. I mean, I think clearly, you know, the Grizzlies are in that third tier at best. You know, if you have Golden State as your top tier and then Clippers Spurs as your second tier, I think there's pretty big third tier, and the Grizzlies are somewhere in that third tier if they stay healthy. I think they can be the four seed. They can get into the low 50s, maybe even mid 50s wins in a best case scenario. I think Conley, Gasol, Parsons as a trio, if they all get healthy, is a fairly high upside trio. So I could see that as a best case scenario.
Yeah, I could see 52, 53 wins from these guys potentially, just to kind of right back at the level that they were, especially if I think Parsons could really make this the best offensive team that they've had in quite some time. But what about from a downside perspective? I mean, we're not going to say that anybody's going to miss the whole season, but just pricing in what some of the injury issues that guys have had, missing games due to rest, age-related performance decline, the young guys don't really take a step forward. They get a lot of replacement level production from the one and the two. What do you see as the downside for this squad?
I don't see them being lower than 35 wins unless the bottom completely falls out. But if they have continuous injury health related issues with Conley, Gasol, Parsons, Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, all five of those guys, either via age or injury, have questions about their availability over the course of a full season. If they have issues with all five of those guys and they're missing games here and there, and they don't have that core group together for long stretches of time, then I think you're looking at, in that 35 to 40 win range. And that would not be a shocking scenario at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think 35, maybe even slightly below that, could be where they would end up. And the draft pick that they owe to Denver, I don't think that's going to play in, because that's only protected 1 through 5 these next couple of years. That's from way back at the Maurice Spate luxury tax dump that then got traded to Denver in the Timofey Mozgov trade from Cleveland. So it's hard to imagine any scenario in which they could actually get into keeping that pick in the top five. So you don't think they're going to be tanking?
No, I don't think there's ever a scenario where they throw it in and tank for that reason. And in fact, from a front office perspective, what they're hoping for is they're a playoff team, and the pick they give up is in the 20s, and they have the Heat second round pick next season if it's 31 through 40. And from Bosch going out, I mean, I think they're hoping that their own pick they give up is in the mid-20s, and the pick they get from Miami is in, the low 30s, in which case it's sort of a wash. That's sort of their best-case scenario in terms of from a pick situation.
Yeah, so, all right, you want to give me your official predicted record for this year?
People keep asking me that, and I keep not answering them. I'm not going to do that to you. I'm not going to do that to you, but I will reserve the right to change this when I actually write something that has a prediction in a couple of weeks, because I'm not totally there yet terms of looking at the whole league and figuring where everything is. Like I said, that their range with Conley, Gasol these last 3.5 years has been a 55-win team when those guys are both on the floor, and a 38-win team when either of them is off the floor. Even if they don't have injuries, those guys are going to miss games. They're going to sit them and rest them some this season. So for now, I'm going to split the difference. I'll go 46.
Yeah, I mean, their over-under was 43.5. I took the under, and that's not to disrespect what this team could be if they're healthy. I just think that both the twin forces of injuries and potentially age-related decline are really going to be an issue. And then when you throw in that not only do they have potential injury issues, but then no real depth behind them, this isn't a team like Boston or Utah that if some of their guys go out, you have someone competent backing them. But what really scares me is I think right now between the one and the two, they're projecting to have maybe 48 minutes a game of replacement level play between guys like Daniels, Carter, Wade Baldwin, Andrew Harrison. I think there's, and even James Ennis, had a nice little run at the end of last year with New Orleans, but he's, it'd be tough to say that we're really counting on him to be an above average rotation player either. So I think with those two, I would probably go with 40 wins as my prediction, with the understanding that if things work out well, this team has a considerably higher upside than that.
I would have taken the under, I don't know, the 43 or 43 and a half, whatever that number was. I would have taken the under a couple weeks ago, and I probably still should. I was just so taken aback when I finally saw Marc Gasol, because he was so much better shape and in so much better spirit than I would have predicted. And I'm sort of swayed by that a little bit. But no, I mean, like I said, that's not going to surprise me at all if this team is in the high 30s, even mid-high 30s. Things go wrong and they end up in the mid-high 30s and they miss the playoffs. That's not going to be a surprise at all.
Yeah, it's always tough as an analyst because, you're there around the team. like that information is important. The fact that he looks great is important. On the other hand, you know, that kind of stuff can be subject to bias. Not saying that that's the case for you, but just generally those sort of subjective things, it's hard to wrap your head around like what that actually means in terms of wins and losses. And then on the other hand, you got a guy who's 31 who wasn't that good last year compared to where he had been and is coming off a foot injury. So it's like trying to meet in the middle between those data points can be kind of difficult in our prognostication. How are you doing on time? You got time to like one more question here?
Sure. I'm fine.
Yeah. So I've been asking some of the people this when we've had time. And I think we'll say, when did Robert Pera buy the team? Was that like 2012 or something?
Oh, I don't remember the year offhand. It was 3 or 4 years ago. It was in the middle of this current playoff run.
Right, yeah. So what I was going to ask is, what grade would you give to just the management team, you know, ownership? And I know there have been some different GMs and people in power during that time period. But overall, what kind of a grade would you give to this ownership / front office since Pera came in?
I mean, it's hard to give it a grade because it's been so volatile, and maybe that sort of would impact sort of a negative grade. But, I mean, the weird thing with this team is that they've had so much continuity on the floor. Gasol, Randolph, Conley, and Tony Allen are entering their seventh season together. They made the playoffs every single season they've been together. The only other franchises that have a longer current playoff streak are the Thunder and the Hawks. And yet, despite that continuity in terms of the players and in terms of the continuity of success, that's happened with two owners, with essentially three different front office regimes, and now a third different head coach. So there's been continuity on the floor and in the standings, generally speaking, and no continuity at all above them. I think it's been pretty chaotic with the ownership and front office over this last few years, but there's a sense that it's finally sort of gotten into alignment this season. Because for the first time, you have a front office that has been put in place by the owner that he seems to have faith in. When Pera came in, Jason Levien basically ran the whole operation, and Pera was sort of an absentee. So now, you know, Pera and Levien had their blow up, and now Pera has put the front office structure in place that he feels comfortable with. And now that front office, instead of having a coach they inherited, has hired their own coach. I think Chris Wallace's ties to the Miami organization, his ties to Eric Spoelstra personally, had a lot of influence on David Fizdale being hired. So there's a sense finally of a coach that has the support of a front office and a front office that has the support of an owner that has not been the case for the last 3 or 4 years. It seems to finally be in place now. So I think retroactively, you'd have to give them a fairly middling grade, but there's a sense that it's finally sort of shored up and it's finally in a good place going forward. The one good thing I would say for Robert Pera is he has been putting a lot of resources. The first year he was an owner, I think there was maybe a little bit of a cash flow issue related to the sale, and they sort of held back a little bit. But the last 2 years, there's been more investment into this franchise in terms of, you know, coaching, in terms of training, in terms of facilities, in terms of things beyond basketball with their communications operation, with the arena. There's been much more investment in this franchise of the last 2 years than there had been for a long time, including under Michael Heisley. And so I think there are good signs now, but there's been a lot of volatility the last few years.
Yeah, it's interesting to look back and you would say, hey, they should get a pretty good grade. They've been in the playoffs for so long. But if you look at it, that's been built around transactions that were made in 2010 and earlier, you know, with Randolph, with Gasol, with Conley. Parsons is really the first major piece they've added.
Yes, this is the first time there's a true change in pecking order. They've done a terrible job of developing young talent over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, to add to that core. And you know, they've done a good job of cycling role players in and out.
The Rudy Gay trade was good. We should give him credit for that.
What's that?
We should give him credit for the Rudy Gay trade. That was a pretty good trade.
Oh, it was, and it got it was criticized pretty heavily at the time by a lot of people, but it was a totally sound trade. And that's what I talked about earlier about. That was the trade that enabled them to elevate Conley and Gasol, and that's a lot of what that was about. It was partly about, you know, Rudy Gay's value relative to contract, and then the issues they had. They were headed towards a luxury tax problem at that time, but it was also about wanting to change the pecking order and take Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, who at one point were the fourth and fifth options on a team that had Zach Randolph, Rudy Gay, and O.J. Mayo, and move them to the top of the heap and make the team about them. And that, I think that was a smart financial move and a smart basketball move. But they have not developed, you know, other pieces. I mean, they've been starved for sort of a new core piece to come in as Zach Randolph and Tony Allen age out, and that is that they failed to do that until now. And Chandler Parsons is that piece if he can be healthy.
The other thing I would point to as a real negative for this team was that Spates trade. He was making like $3 million a year. He ended up actually opting out. So it basically was to save $3 million in 1 year. And that did help get them out of the tax, although I think go ahead. Sorry.
I was always skeptical about that move. I remain skeptical about that move. But they would tell you, and not just the people in the front office who made the move, but people who were sort of opposed to the front office at the time. Like Lionel Hollins personally told me that making that trade, which sort of got them under the tax line, enabled them to do the Rudy Gay trade. That whatever you think of the deal they got when they traded Rudy Gay, the offers were much worse before that point, because people thought they had to move Gay for luxury tax reasons, and that they were getting terrible offers. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what I was told at the time, that making the first move helped set up the second move in terms of their leverage.
Huh, that's an interesting thought, and I had never considered that before, so I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah, but certainly on the surface, number one, the fact that they just weren't willing to pay it. That's their right. They're running a business, but you know, that still has to go into your grade as an owner. If you're not willing to pay the tax and you're giving up what is looking like a pick that could be a great pick many years down the line, but still, just to save, you know, what would be like $5-7 million bucks or so, maybe more like 10 when you consider the distribution, but still that looks kind of rough.
They've been over the course of the last several years, they've been way too willing to trade picks, to trade future picks to grease the wheels for other things to happen.
Talked about.
Right. Now, I mean, they ended up getting the pick back for Jeff Green, and they turned that this summer they flipped what would have been a future first. They got Deontay Davis and the rights to, hopefully I won't mispronounce his name, but Rade Zagorek, who they think they'll bring in next year. So they did salvage the Jeff Green thing a little bit. I think, you know, the pick they ended up getting was not as valuable as the one they gave up, but at least they salvaged something out of it. But no, that's been a criticism. That's been a criticism for the franchise going back even further. Michael Heisman sold a first-round pick, which I thought was abominable to do, just for straight cash. They have not valued their picks enough. I think the attitude of that has finally come around, but that's been a problem for the franchise.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Let us know where we can follow your work.
You can find me, follow me on Twitter, my basketball stuff. I sort of have dual lives. My basketball stuff is at HarringtonNBA. I'll link to everything there, but if you go to commercialpill.com to the Grizzlies page, you'll find my weekly pick and pop column, mostly weekly pick and pop column, and my occasional pick and pop cast. I had Rob Mahoney for Sports Illustrated on late last week, so that one's up right now.
Yeah, I've actually listened to that on occasion. I saw that come across, and next time I'm cleaning the kitchen, I'll put that one in the earbuds. So thanks so much again. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA. Thanks so much to everyone who's given us iTunes reviews or ratings. That really helps us out a lot as well. And we'll be back shortly with more in our season outlook series. Till then.